Welcome to the Retail Focus Podcast, a weekly collection of news, interviews, and information from the world of retail.
I want to welcome everyone to this edition of the Retail Focus Podcast. I'm Trent Kling for Leighton Kling, working behind the scenes. Today's episode, our post-Black Friday episode, will feature Adam Haleem as our interview guest, the Senior VP of Business Development at Flip. He will join us to talk about the importance of advertisements and flyers in particular as it pertains to retailers. He's got some interesting data to back up a few perspectives, certainly, but also he's going to talk about some interesting A-B testing they've been doing at Flip as well to just see exactly how retail consumers interact with those flyers, especially now that so many are digital. We'll also talk about a leadership transition at Dick's, and in our news segment, we've got a Thanksgiving weekend projection from Deloitte. A reminder that you can like us and rate us however you access us, whether that be on Apple Podcast, Spotify, or any other podcast listening service. You can also check us out on social media at Retail Podcast. So as I mentioned, regarding our news section, we're going to take a look at some data that came down this week from Deloitte, and it dives into consumer-specific spend and consumer perspectives during this Thanksgiving weekend going into Cyber Monday tomorrow, or the day after this podcast launches. Now, Rod Sides of Deloitte joined us on an earlier show this year to discuss overall consumer sentiment regarding the holidays in their annual holiday retail survey, but this week we got an idea of what consumers might do during this weekend specifically in their pre-Thanksgiving pulse survey. So this does a couple of things and is included on the show for a couple of reasons. First, this survey provides more data as far as the Thanksgiving weekend of shopping, so stretching from Thanksgiving Day through Cyber Monday, and a bit of an updated perspective on what consumers are thinking. Second, it's too early, obviously, to see exactly what numbers we're going to get from this weekend in shopping because, again, a lot of retailers are stretching out Black Friday deals. So it's going to be just a little bit before we get some of that pertinent data. And so what better way to talk about Thanksgiving weekend and Black Friday than to give you very, very up-to-date information from Deloitte this week regarding consumer sentiment about Thanksgiving weekend. Now, quick note regarding the survey. Again, this is meant to assess the consumer perspective. So this is not the retailer perspective. This information is what consumers believe they will do during Thanksgiving weekend. Now, some years, consumer sentiment is in line with actual behavior. Some, it isn't. The jury is out on this year. Obviously, you're going to have a little bit of the middle in the Venn diagram in any particular year. But we should keep in mind that consumers said two things in Deloitte's annual holiday survey that seem a bit incongruous with the data we're currently seeing, and this was actually pointed out by Deloitte in this most recent report. First is that customers plan to do their shopping over a shorter time span than 2019. This was so surprising because 2019 had so few days between Thanksgiving and Christmas, something we mentioned a lot on the podcast last year. And then second is that a lot of consumers planned to do, or reported that they plan to do, around 70% of their shopping by dollar amount via e-commerce. Now, early numbers from retailers suggest that this isn't necessarily the case and that the true amount of spend in e-commerce is far more likely to be less than 50%. Deloitte's own Insight IQ data shows the number actually closer to 33% e-commerce spend from customers as recently as October. So that's just something to keep in mind. We've talked on the show before is that there seems to be this situation where consumers think they spend more money in e-commerce and think they will spend more money in e-commerce than they actually end up spending. And one other thing Deloitte mentioned kind of in the preface to this most recent data is that October promotions, you look at Prime Day, you look at other promotions or Prime Day adjacent promotions from other retailers, were in fact effective in attracting shoppers. Overall sales during Prime Day were up 6% year over year. So perhaps this promotional environment did cause consumers to rethink their habits regarding that shortened holiday spending season that we talked about. And we'll get to more about Prime Day in a bit because there is some updated data regarding Prime Day as far as this survey is concerned. Now, in any case, we see from the survey an updated consumer sentiment, certainly as additional COVID waves begin to take effect throughout the country, and were beginning to take effect throughout the country when consumers had been surveyed for this. Data from this report does suggest a bit of a change versus Thanksgiving adjacent shopping in 2019, though a much slighter one than what we would have expected in terms of the change. For example, 74% of customers plan to do at least some shopping online versus 62% last year. So again, you're looking at an increase of 1,200 basis points. Now, that increase is about in line with what we've seen during the rest of 2020. So it doesn't seem to be at least a matter of maybe people going more online than they were, say, in April or May or June during the holiday season or during Thanksgiving weekend. Likewise, 57% said they would avoid in-store shopping to avoid crowds during Thanksgiving period this year. But you know, the interesting thing is, again, the numbers at 42% last year, not a huge jump. And what's interesting is you see some numbers that, while not contradictory, do suggest that certain age groups might be more willing to shop in store. And initially you think, oh, well, e-commerce adoption might have been slow among older age groups. But what we see in this Deloitte study is that 55% of Gen Z or millennials noted their preference to shop actually in-store on Black Friday. So this indicates that given the overall number of people that would avoid in-store shopping to avoid crowds, the e-commerce push here isn't driven entirely by digital natives. And again, this makes sense if you think about it, because oftentimes, as far as COVID-19 is concerned, it's said that the older population is at higher risk. Certainly, death rates bear that out, and hospitalization rates among those that are a little bit older bear that out. So it makes sense that those that are older might be more willing to go to e-commerce to do their shopping so as to avoid any potential vectors for being infected, whereas maybe the younger generation doesn't care as much, or maybe they're just not as affected by that prospect of being infected by going out in public. Now, overall spend still appeared substantial given the circumstances. And again, this is for Thanksgiving weekend. So we're not talking about holiday spending overall, which would be much more than what the numbers we're talking about. The average spend customers noted was $401, and this is the average anticipated spend. That's down only 3.3% year over year. Given economic considerations and ostensibly shopping starting earlier for many, this is a pretty strong number in terms of consumer sentiment surrounding Thanksgiving weekend. Overall participation was slated to fall about 500 basis points in terms of those that are going shopping on Thanksgiving weekend overall, from 79% to 74% of the population. Now, I mentioned these sales numbers are strong given the circumstances. Obviously, we don't like to talk about declines necessarily on the podcast, and you don't like to see those, but the survey also found that 28% of shoppers are concerned about making upcoming payments of some sort. So whether that be rent or mortgage or credit cards, you have a significant number of shoppers that have been economically impacted by the pandemic, and over a quarter of them are concerned about making payments upcoming. Now, this number is a slight increase over the approximate quarter of shoppers that said COVID had negatively impacted them economically in Deloitte's earlier survey that we were joined by Rod Sides to discuss a little over a month ago. Additionally, 44% of customers said they plan on delaying large purchases that would have otherwise been made during the period. So you have people saying, hey, I want to delay large purchases because of the pandemic, because of the impacts. You have 28% of shoppers saying they're worried about making rent or paying bills in the future. And yet, despite all of this, given this backdrop, the fact that customers think they'll only spend 3.3% less than what they spent last year during the Thanksgiving period is notable. And perhaps this either speaks to people buying fewer big ticket items, but buying more different items overall, maybe spreading things around a little bit. Or maybe this points to customers not really knowing how they're going to spend their money, but certainly having put aside enough to spend during this Thanksgiving weekend. Now, it could also be that customers' eyes are bigger than their pocketbooks and they think they'll spend more than they actually will. That's actually something we saw during Prime Day. Now, we're also seeing an increase versus September in terms of Deloitte's data in consumer sentiment regarding timing of buying. For example, 56% of customers in the most recent Deloitte survey said they actually plan to shop earlier now out of concern for out of stocks. Now, this is up over 42% last year. 42% thought that they would avoid out of stocks by shopping earlier. So again, you have more customers as we get closer to December wanting to hit the stores earlier, which again might stretch out that shopping period just a little bit. Again, we may see some momentum towards continued earlier purchases. At this point, you're really looking at those last-minute shoppers because, as Rod said, you can define shoppers in four different ways or four loose baskets, and it's that last-minute shopper, because of stock concerns, that might be spending their money a little bit earlier. And, of course, you have the shipping and supply chain concerns that have now even leaked their way into mainstream media outlets, and people certainly have to be taking that into consideration. Finally, one final note regarding Thanksgiving weekend before we get to some Prime Day data from this survey. Regarding Black Friday day parts, there were some interesting findings there as well. It seems that shoppers are wanting to shop later, and of course, that makes sense. If you're not making Black Friday a massive event with these huge crowds, if you're trying to socially distance, perhaps not as many people are going to get up early in the morning because of that rush that they expect to get out of Black Friday. 36% of customers that were going to shop on Black Friday said they anticipated shopping from midnight to 6 a.m., 46% from 7 to 10 a.m., and 17% unsure. And again, this is among just Black Friday shoppers, not shoppers overall. Overall spend was expected to be about $125 across all day parts on Black Friday. No surprise that the group that's unsure about when they'll do their shopping expected to spend the least. Early day part shoppers, so those early morning shoppers, anticipated spending $134. Morning shoppers, so the 7 to 10 a.m. group, expecting to spend $136. Only 41% anticipated doing Black Friday shopping mostly in store. This number last year was 61%. But again, this might be overstated because you look at last year, 61% of Black Friday shoppers said they would shop mostly in store. Maybe that was correct, but the numbers certainly indicated that in terms of money coming into retailers, oftentimes it was 85% or greater that was coming in via in-store shopping. So it could be the basket size is bigger in store, but again, it's this hint of maybe overstating online shopping for customers that might be propping up again here. And again, I point to the fact that 55% of Gen Z and millennials still plan on shopping in store during Black Friday to kind of underscore the fact that there might be more at play here and maybe some interesting things where shoppers aren't self-actualized. And certainly it wouldn't be the first time that that's happened. Now, as I mentioned, the survey also provided some color on October promotional activity, most notably surrounding Prime Day. Again, this is in terms of shopper sentiment and their own reported behavior. Of overall holiday shoppers, 23% shopped on Prime Day with an average spend of $187. Deloitte was keen to point out that this was lower than the average spend customers indicated in their September survey, as in that survey, those that were spending money on Prime Day anticipated spending $344. Again, came in at just $187, according to customers' own reported behavior. So whether this was as a result of lack of deals out there, whether it was a result of kind of that paradox of choice, which is something Adam Halim will talk about later on in his interview, it's tough to tell, but that's an interesting data point. And again, another data point in the potential argument that people think they do more online shopping or will do more online shopping than they actually do. Here, Prime Day, a mostly online event, especially this year, and people said that they would spend a lot more than they actually did during Prime Day. So again, tough to tell why that phenomenon is actually the case. One interesting thing I did note is about a quarter of shoppers felt like Prime Day deals were better than any other holiday season or retail holiday season. And that seems pretty substantial, but you think about it, that means 75% of their respondents said that the deals were as good or better outside of Prime Day. So again, don't want to say that Prime Day is losing its luster, but certainly doesn't have quite that esteem that maybe it has in previous years. And furthermore, after Prime Day, 24% said they'll now spend less during the Thanksgiving period. Again, seems like a pretty big number, but when you look at it again, 76% said they will spend the same or more, maybe indicating that they didn't get what they wanted out of Prime Day, or maybe indicating that maybe their economic circumstance has improved since Prime Day. Overall, though, while Prime Day did cause some traffic during the week of Prime Day, as we discussed, 6% rise year over year in spending for that particular week in October, October retail sales as a whole, according to Deloitte's data, were up 3.5%. That was roughly in line with increases in June through September, so it didn't look like there was a specific pop necessarily. And so I think that's notable. So on one hand, you see several sales going on during Prime Day week, so to speak, and certainly a lot of promotional activity driving those sales up 6%. But overall, on the whole in October, we didn't see a massive jump in terms of retail sales. So again, that part of it kind of supports Deloitte's data that, hey, maybe shoppers are condensing their shopping season this year. I'm really anxious overall to see early November data when we begin to see that, because again, many stores have been running Black Friday deals since the beginning of November or the end of October, and I'll be anxious to see exactly how much of a pop year over year is noted from that promotional activity in early November for retailers. Well, that pulls to an end our news segment for this version of the Retail Focus podcast. Coming up once again, Adam Halim, the Senior VP of Business Development at Flip. He joins us to discuss, among other things, flyers and kind of the science behind flyers, flyers moving from print to digital, and also how today's retail shopper interacts with those flyers. Many years ago on the show, we visited the topic of creating freestanding inserts or flyers for retailers from a graphic design perspective. And those have been print mainstays, certainly for a long time, but as people's reading habits tend towards the digital space, how is their viewership and interaction with these advertisements also changing? Here to discuss this question and other findings from a report on this topic is Adam Halim, the Senior Vice President of Business Development at Flip, who this year produced a special research report on flyer readership trends in North America. Adam, thank you for joining the podcast today.
Trent, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
First, I was wondering if you could discuss what Flip does on the day-to-day so that our listeners kind of know the perspective that you, as well as the company, brings on this topic.
Sure. So for the shopper, Flip is a free app that is found on iOS that pulls together all the great value and savings content from merchants across North America and makes it available to shoppers. So on average, we help shoppers save about $45 a week as they're making decisions on where to buy and what to buy. And then for the retail side, what we do is, because we have all these very high intent shoppers, we pool together the shoppers and make them available for retailers and help connect some really fantastic retailers to those shoppers.
So this is a circumstance really where Flip is dealing with not only these type of advertisements, not only flyers and that type of thing, but again, many retail companies on a day-to-day basis. So I want to turn our attention now to this report regarding flyers or FSIs. I was wondering if you could just give us the general state of flyer advertising in North America as it stands today pertaining to the retail industry.
Yeah, sure. So it comes probably as no surprise that prior to COVID, so in January, there was already a trend towards digital flyer readership. So every year we run a flyer readership study in North America, and we've done this since 2015. And at the beginning of 2020, we always conduct the research in January after the holidays settled. We saw we've reached a tipping point where more people claimed to read flyers or weekly ads, mostly only in digital versus print. And this is the first time that we've seen more people use the digital version than print. And that was prior to COVID. And so once COVID hit, what we saw on our app is a significant bump in number of shoppers. I mean, this is no surprise, digital consumption across the board for every retailer and any digital media channel, frankly, took a huge uptick. And so we haven't reconducted the survey, but our suspicion is if we ran that survey yet again right now, we would see that the delta or the difference between digital flyer readership and those who claim to read only mostly digital is probably even bigger. So the biggest real trend has been this shift away from print. But then that introduces a ton of very interesting questions around what should you be thinking about putting in the digital flyer? And how should you even be thinking about the flyer process or the weekly ad process when you're no longer thinking about it for print?
So yeah, let's dig into those questions here. As a retailer, knowing that a majority of your shoppers are gravitating towards those digital flyers, towards those digital advertisements, what should be top of mind as you go about creating not only the content, but also the appearance and the layout for these?
Yeah, so this is really interesting, and we are asked this question a lot. I think the first thing I would say is design for mobile. Don't design for desktop. So think about somebody viewing your weekly ad now on a 3-inch wide screen. So that's the first consideration that you have to take. The other thing is, we use this analogy of when TV first came out, and I know this has been beat up, this story, but the radio stations moved to TV and didn't really understand how to adopt this new visual format. And so what they had done is just basically video recorded their interviews. Now, it's funny, we've come full circle on podcasts, but essentially that's what they thought TV was going to be. It's just like, we'll just see the face of the person who is talking on the radio. And in a way, what we've done initially with print to digital is we're doing the same thing right now. So a lot of retailers are still basically taking the print content and just putting it online. And that's fine, and it's a good first step. But then you got to ask yourself, okay, we're dealing with a completely different medium. So can we now personalize these offers or have a mix of mass offers and personalizations? That's the second question you'd want to ask yourself is, how can I show the right product, the right price to the right shopper? Personalization not only means demographic in terms of somebody who's perhaps in the baby category, showing them baby items, but it means regional or location-based pricing. And I think for retail, where a shopper is ultimately making the decision to shop at somebody or at a retailer who's within their geography, like there's a limited number of miles around them that they're going to explore, you really got to think about location strongly. And so I think what we're testing with a number of retailers is the idea of, how do I make sure I'm the best price on the known value items, so that when I'm compared or when shoppers are making a purchase decision, I can win that battle at the local level without having to adjust national pricing. And we can get to the point where we can do it really even at the sub zip code level, which is exciting.
That's fantastic. One of the things I wanted to backtrack to is, because I know there might be some people listening out there who are like, well, maybe not many people read the flyers and not many people read the FSIs, but I think one of the things that's driven home by every year you've done the survey is just how many consumers will read these flyers or interact with these flyers. What are some of the numbers that your group has come up with over the last 5 years, just in terms of viewership and interaction with these?
Right. And Trent, I mean, that's, I think, frankly, surprising for everyone. But the data has shown consistently over the last 5 years that in the US, roughly 86% of general population people we've surveyed say they still use the flyer and FSIs as key pieces in their shopping decisions. So it's still a very popular tool for people to use, both the coupons and the flyers.
So going back to one of the things that you were explaining regarding, you know, it's just like radio moving to television. You're just simply slapping whatever the image was for your print flyer onto your digital version of the flyer. That might work for some age groups, may not work for digital natives and that type of thing. But one of the other interesting things about this survey is you guys break down age ranges and how they interact with flyers. What are some of the age-specific impacts that you see in terms of how they impact with flyers and then also the type of content that they want to see?
Right. And so it should come as no surprise that when you're looking at the age group under 35, they're almost entirely and mostly digital. And so it's really the older generation that is making it even a close race between print and digital right now. And so again, we do conduct the survey every year and we break out the respondents into various age groups. And the youngest age group, which is 35 and under, if I group them all together, are looking at about 65% to 70% readership and then digital, mostly digital.
And then beyond that, there are certain benefits to retailers just from a numerical standpoint or just from a revenue standpoint when it comes to reaching those readers in a digital fashion. What were some of your findings as far as basket size, as far as conversion rates when you're reaching customers via digital versus print?
Right. So this is an interesting finding. And just generally speaking, when we look at the spend of a shopper who reads the flyer or doesn't, those who read the flyer spend about 30% more whether that's print or digital. Just being exposed to a weekly ad or a flyer before entering the store or going online drives up the purchases. And then for those who read it in only digital, it's slightly higher, but 1% to 2% higher than print. So I think the bigger story for us in that stat is it's not necessarily just about print or digital, it's the power of this weekly ad. And I think it's been something that's been around for, according to our research, almost 100 years. This idea of retailers saying, hey, everybody, look what's going on in my store this week. Why don't you come visit me? And this pre-shopping behavior where shoppers are kind of whittling down their list or getting exposed to categories or products that they may not see just by walking into the store is still very valuable. And so, again, I think the key thing is it is a valuable tool. It is driving baskets and it is driving more trips than those who don't. And the big shift is it's moving into digital.
Yeah. So the bottom line is these are effective regardless of the medium in terms of increasing basket size and engagement. I was curious, we've obviously talked about the move to digital. We've talked about the move increasingly towards personalization, even at a sub zip code level. I was wondering if there are any other aspects of flyers that seem to maybe drive conversion or basket size or interaction besides just those determining factors, digital versus print, or maybe personalization versus national.
Right. And you know, that's a really fun question. And with some of our leading retailers, we go into these ideation sessions where we explore, like, why do people gravitate towards this weekly ad? And I want to like step back and put something in perspective. The flyer or the weekly ad, at the end of the day, it's an advertisement. Yet it's almost like a Super Bowl ad. Shoppers actively seek it out. They want to watch these advertising, which is increasingly rare nowadays with everybody has ad blockers. I mean, for me watching Netflix, I can't stand looking at a commercial. It's like awkward for me now to be exposed to a commercial. So in this world of like anti-ad kind of media consumption, it's shocking to see something like the weekly ad. Shoppers actually don't see it as an advertisement. So I think that alone, that insight to look at this and say, this is actually valuable content for a shopper, I think says a lot. So I think, why does it work? One for sure is the fact that they believe they can find great value from it. So they feel like retailers are telling them, hey, this is what I've done to fight hard to save you money or to fight hard and get you an assortment of goods that isn't available elsewhere. And I want you to see what I have to offer you so you can make a decision on where to shop. And I think retailers do put a lot of effort into that and it shows up and shoppers really value the content to help them make a decision. Other things I think is it does expose you to categories that you won't normally be exposed to. So there's one drug retailer we worked with on any given day. They have over 100,000 SKUs in the store. And of those SKUs, there's something about 6,000 items that are on sale. 6,000 items. We joke about it that it would be easier for them to make a flyer showing what's not on sale. It would be a smaller flyer than what is on sale. So really, the amount of choice is huge for the shopper. It's overwhelming. And you're dealing with the paradox of choice, right? The more options I give you, the less likely you are to make a decision. And so when you curate and reduce the choices for the shopper in something like the weekly ad, it makes it easier for them to make quick decisions on which products they can buy. And when they make quick decisions, they look at more products. So it's really interesting way to drive kind of mental interaction with the whole store prior to them entering the store.
That's a really fascinating point because, as you mentioned, if you can cut down the paradox of choice a little bit, obviously you're going to reap some benefits from the customer's point of view. I wanted to go back to something you mentioned because you talk about dealing with a drugstore. Obviously, drugstores aren't the only ones that create these advertisements or content, as oftentimes customers will see it. You've got grocery stores, clothing retailers, general merchandise, all of them out there producing this. Is there a difference in terms of how people expect to interact or how people do interact with these flyers depending on the segment from which the flyer is coming?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we ran, what's beautiful about our platform is we have millions of shoppers who integrate every week. So we can rapidly A/B test content. I mean, we can create these holdout groups with our data science team and serve them up very specific alterations to the regular ad. And we can test something as small as color or size of the font. And here's some interesting insights. So first, for grocery, shoppers want density. It's okay to put, just to pull out a number as an example, 20 products on a screen, frankly, because they know what an avocado is. They know it quickly, they can identify it visually, they're interested in seeing the avocado, seeing the price. You can't do that with fashion. fashion, because there's more nuance and it's an unknown product and it requires more discovery, you limit yourself to maybe 6 items per screen. And so you really have to expand and allow people to engage with the content. So that was a really interesting finding on our part, where density was okay for known items, but not okay for items where people need to create, I guess, a relationship, but they don't really know what it is.
Now, I don't want to stray too far off the beaten path here, but you really piqued my interest with noting that you can generate data, you can A/B test a lot of different things, including down to the fonts. I'm just wondering, is there a certain trend that we're seeing in regards to font, in regards to design on the whole of these flyers?
Yeah, and I actually would love to go down this road. Obviously, it's so fascinating. I think this goes back to the point of when you stop thinking about digital as just reading radio on the TV and you start thinking, wow, like we're not constrained by print anymore. We can literally A/B test on the fly all the time and use that data to improve the product. It's fascinating. So in terms of like what people are looking for, I mean, there's preliminary data, and this is like very preliminary, so I'm just going to throw it out there because I just saw it last week on color tone. And I think this is a little bit, I wouldn't like bank on this data, but it showed that the bluer tones, hues, seem to drive more interaction for some reason on the whole. I don't know what is driving that. I suspect it has to do something with the blue light on any of the screens that people are using, but obviously that's an interesting one. Another cool insight though is that when you think about putting a discounted price, often what you see is the retailer will show the sale price in large font. And right below it, you'll see a really small font, the regular price, and it's crossed out. What we found is it's more effective, and this is really counterintuitive, to make the sale price smaller than the regular price. And the reason is it's an anchoring effect. This is our hypothesis, at least, that the shopper is attracted to the biggest fonts on the page. So they first see the regular price. It's a big number. Then if the second thing they see is the sale price and it's smaller, it makes the sale price look better. And so there's really small things that we can A/B test and see if there's actual behavioral changes, but that's an example.
That's amazingly fascinating. Honestly, I could talk about this all day long because I love design. I know a lot of our listeners love design, and it's kind of ironic. You mentioned the blue tones. Those are the same colors that were used on this original report that I'm looking at here. So, but as we kind of wrap things up here, we've talked a little bit about going towards personalization, making sure your digital content is a little more bespoke than what the print content is. What other trends can we expect to see in this sector over the next 5 years?
Okay, so what we are seeing is definitely a reduction in assortment. I think this idea of having, 100 flavors of the same item and incurring the increased supply chain costs, that is probably not going to be happening for the near future. I think this trend towards less assortment, simplified supply chains to be able to deliver things faster and stay in stock, that doesn't seem to be going away. So I'd say that's like definitely one of the big trends I'm seeing. The other one is around this smart personalization. And so early on, maybe 3 years ago, we were engaged with a lot of retailers trying to develop one-to-one personalization. That means like literally everybody would have a different flyer, and that failed. So the predominant model right now is, we call it, it's kind of like the Netflix model, which is you have these blockbuster deals or blockbuster things you want to communicate to the shopper, and you communicate that to every shopper, no personalization. Then you augment those or you add in some more personalized content on top of them. It's the mix of the two that is really great. And I think that's a trend that will continue. Obviously, the other trend is the reduction of print and more focus on digital. And I'd say what we're seeing is they're not thinking of the digital ad now as just an ad. A lot of retailers are working with us to think about it as an extension of their store. So think about it as like a miniature store that lives digitally that you can send anywhere in the world for you. And it's out there. So on Facebook's a good example. We have technology and a partnership with Facebook where we can create a weekly ad within Facebook that is effectively like a mini store. And the shopper doesn't have to leave their Facebook experience, and they can shop. They can even add to their own list or add to cart and then re-engage with Facebook. So it's almost like your store has popped up everywhere now. So I think that's an interesting trend that we'll continue to see.
So many things to keep an eye on in this space over the next few years. Well, once again, Adam Haleem, the Senior Vice President of Business Development at Flip, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been fantastic.
Yeah, thank you, Trent. It's a lot of fun. Thanks.
As always, we may have a position in or against companies we discuss on the podcast. Do not invest in stocks solely on the input of the podcast hosts.
We thank Adam for joining us here on the podcast. And once again, you can check out Flip if you'd like and some of their insights at just flip.com, F-L-I-P-P.com. Their blog is a great resource as far as some of their internal insights are concerned. Our Looking Ahead segment, we go to sporting goods this week as it was announced that Edward Stack would be stepping down from the chief executive role or the CEO role beginning next year. Lauren Hobart, who is currently the president at Dick's Sporting Goods, will actually take over the role of CEO effective February 1st. So congratulations to Lauren, who used to actually work at PepsiCo. She's been working with Dick's for about the last 10 years and has been in the president role for the last three. Now, obviously, whenever you're looking ahead to a change in leadership, some companies, you see a massive change in direction. I don't know that you're going to see that with Dick's. Part of the reason is, this is a big story overall, especially in the Pittsburgh area, because Edward Stack, it was his father that basically founded the company, and so this is the first time you're really getting a family member stepping away from the CEO role. Now, still controls about 60% of the shares as of April, according to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, so still has quite a bit of power in the company, will still serve as the executive chairman, and will still work in certain ways on the retail end. But again, handing over the CEO reins to Lauren Hobart. And one of the things that was noted when Dick's was discussing this particular succession plan is the fact that Dick's is planning to veer more towards outdoor activities. They also said that they plan on converting a couple of Field & Stream stores in Pittsburgh and Columbus into a new test concept store for them. So we've talked about their off-price test concepts that they're rolling out in some basically vacated retail spots. But this new concept for Dick's is going to be called Public Lands. And of course, obviously, it's going to be expanded just a little bit beyond. You think of Field & Stream, you think of hunting and fishing, generally speaking. But again, looking at getting more into running, looking at getting more into outdoors activities. And when you look at this sector, this is something that's doing very well for certain retailers. You look at Sierra Trading Company and the success that they've had. REI, according to some employees that are well connected there, has been doing fairly well, especially since the pandemic started. But you look at some of the most popular and growing sports in the U.S., running, trail running, hiking, biking, all of that's included there. So Dick's wants to get more into that, especially running, which is something that they mentioned during this announcement. And honestly, Dick's has been a little bit lacking in that category for the last several years. I myself am a runner. I find it easier to go to a local running store to get some of those products and especially shoes. But Dick's, again, promising to maybe ramp up some of their outdoor offerings. And I think this is a fantastic concept for them. Now, we'll see how exactly it plays out. Now, those Public Land stores, and again, Pittsburgh and Columbus, there's some great outdoor areas in that part of the country. And of course, I'm in Colorado. I can tell you firsthand, there are trails now that I used to be able to park at, and there would be five or six cars there, and now there's 50 cars in the parking lot. So native Coloradans or people that live here have had to go deeper and deeper and deeper into the mountains to find these hiking spots because hiking has become so popular. These outdoor activities, biking and so forth, become so popular. The other thing that actually Edward Stack noted during this particular announcement is being outdoors during a pandemic is seen as being safe. So people are playing golf, they're kayaking, they're doing other things. And so again, Dick's making this move. Honestly, on the whole, both Leighton and I have liked several of Dick's moves over the last 2 to 3 years. And I think having Lauren Hobart step into that CEO role is a great choice and another great decision by Dick's, given the momentum that she's been able to instill in the company over the past 3 years from her current position as president. So looking forward to how Dick's implements this, because again,
it's one thing to say you're going to do this and say you're going to carry more equipment and say you're going to make a pivot. It's another thing to follow through. And we know in retail, the follow through doesn't always exist on that ground floor. So I, for one, am going to be going to several Dick's stores over the next couple of years in different parts of the country just to see kind of how their merchandise mix has changed. They've already talked about maybe altering some of their firearm-related products because firearms aren't selling well in certain parts of the country, replacing those with substitute sections. So again, talk about an industry that's always evolving, but one that has been popular during the pandemic, even though, by the way, I'm going to go back to Deloitte data. I'm going to circle back to Deloitte data, which is how we started the show. Deloitte suggests that since the pandemic started, sporting goods in the industry overall is down 7%. You can see why, certainly, if high school sports and middle school sports are getting canceled or postponed, people aren't buying equipment for that. But certainly adult sports is where you're seeing that massive growth. And I think Dick's is all kinds of willing to hop on that bandwagon going into this coming decade. So that'll do it for us here on the Retail Focus podcast. Once again, a big thanks to Adam Halim of Flip for joining us on today's show. And a big thanks to Leighton for working behind the scenes. Now, coming up on next week's podcast, we'll be joined by Cheryl Sullivan, who heads up Demand Tech. Cheryl will be discussing a bit of a preview towards 2021 sales. We've talked all this much about holiday sales and holiday sales previews, but that conversation is going to center around 2021. We've also got a couple of great interviews for the week afterwards, including Vidya Peters with Marketta. Vidya was a great interview. Her interview should air, in fact, the Wednesday of December 9th. So some great podcasts coming up for you. Can't wait to launch those. Thank you for listening to this one, and we'll be back approximately 7 days from now.
This has been the Retail Focus Podcast. For more, visit our website at retailfocuspodcast.com and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter at Retail Podcast.